Welcome to a series of netcasts brought to you by Yale University.
Welcome, everybody, to the second installment of the Bright Lights, Green Sights podcast series. Again, the purpose of this podcast is to recap a talk that occurred earlier today on Yale's campus. Today, we are joined by Min Tsai, founder of Hodo Soy, as well as Justin Freiberg from the Yale West Campus Farm, as well as the Yale Sustainable Food Program. Thank you very much for being here, both of you.
It's a pleasure.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us.
So to kick it off, Min, can you tell us a little bit about how this venture came to be and a little bit of your personal story in moving from investment banker over to tofu maker?
Sure. My name is Min Tsai, and I started a tofu company 10 years ago. Prior to that, I was in the finance industry. I guess the tipping point, there were several, one of which is related to economics and the economy. I realized that I love food by looking at my annual credit card bill and how 90% of it, it's on food. And also having been in the finance industry, I recognized that there were many recessions and the impact of these recessions on myself, but also on the economy and my colleagues. So I wanted to do something that's a little bit more recession-proof, and I love food. So it ended up being a meaningful and natural transition to food. And specifically, why tofu? I love tofu. I grew up eating delicious tofu in Vietnam. And I chose tofu because the industry in America, it's really commoditized, and there's not a lot of good tofu out there. And tofu is a food that is somewhat mysterious, and I enjoy the opportunity to educate people about tofu, and we're still doing that. And I also chose tofu because I recognized that there was an opportunity to create an artisan food, an artisan tofu line, instead of the commodity tofu. And so those are the main reasons why I ended up starting Hodo Soy 10 years ago. And I think our success today, being with Chipotle and with large chains like Costco, for example, is attributed to the fact that we continue to innovate and make really delicious tofu for our customers.
Could you dive in a little further on that? Can you tell us about the tofu you make and the other products and how you distinguish them from what else is on the market?
That's a great question. I think one of the key differentiator about tofu, or the most important one, is taste. We wanted to make a tofu that tastes good. We want to make an important and a meaningful first impression for anyone who's never tried tofu. When they eat it, we want them to say, wow, this is really yummy. And our products are that. Really surprise people when they eat it. They usually don't believe that it's tofu until they look at the ingredients. And so that's the thing that we try to achieve, is really get people to change their mind about tofu. And then for those who are already experienced tofu eaters, they can distinguish the quality. And the quality comes from the fact that we use organic soybeans. We make a really thick milk. I often liken our tofu as sort of drinking fresh orange juice as opposed to a tang or a powder orange juice, So which is what's out there in the mass market. So we wanted to make a tofu that's really ingredient pure and rich and flavorful.
Wonderful. Could you jump into a little bit on the, tell us a little bit about the business side and the growth of the company, and specifically if you could put that in the context of the food industry and good food companies in particular that you see coming up around the country?
Yeah, food needs to take a long view. And when we first started the company, we recognized that, for us to grow this business, we have to grow it slowly and methodically. We plan well, but we also are a product of timing. We started the company 10 years ago during the time where at the farmers markets. The farmers markets themselves were great venues to experiment in terms of recipe, but also to get direct feedback from customers as far as what products they like and what price point makes sense. So to give you some context, when we started out 10 years ago in the San Francisco Bay Area, there were 16 farmers markets per week. So, you know, many of them are during the weekends. Today, there are more than 160 farmers market per week. So it's great for the consumer. Pretty much any day of the week, you can roll out of bed and hit a farmer's market. So it's a great way for food entrepreneurs to really experiment and grow their business. That's how we started. And we were discovered by a lot of chefs who appreciated the purity, the artisan element of our food. And then they basically started using our tofu in their restaurant, and they branded our tofu. So many people call us the Nyman Ranch of tofu. And from that, we started to expand into other retail regions. And most recently, we pasteurized our product, and now our products can reach pretty much anywhere in the U.S. And we're looking for opportunity to work with distributors to get them to larger grocery chains, and also to regions beyond California and the West Coast.
Very, very interesting. I'm personally incredibly excited to try your product as it moves east.
We'll have to ship some to you.
Yes, FedEx would be great, or overnight, or for that matter, let it take 6 weeks. That'd be fine. I grew up in a family that had Chinese origins, and we loved our tofu. But I would, you know, invite friends over, and my mom's a great cook, but a lot of them had a odd first experience with tofu. And I wonder if that's ever been something that you've thought about. How do you reintroduce people to a delicious type of tofu when potentially their first experience was with a tofu that they didn't particularly love?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think I have no doubt your mom's a great cook.
Thank you.
So for sure. But I think for a lot of first-time tofu eaters, you know, it's not so much the flavor that comes with the tofu, but the texture is so unusual for people. I suspect your mom cooks with a softer tofu, perhaps. You know, a lot of people, their first experience with tofu tend to be sort of a vegetarian food. They tend to be exposed to tofu as a meat substitute. So
right.
Their mindsets is already set up for a certain type of texture. And when that texture is not what they expect, then that's when they have a reaction to it.
Right.
And then on top of that, a lot of tofu, if the sauce is delicious, and once the sauce is gone, the product itself, the tofu itself, when you buy it at the commodity level, it's made really cheaply. So it doesn't have its own flavor necessarily. So we make tofu, and we basically want tofu to stand on its own legs. So we tell people, if you eat our tofu, you can actually taste the tofu. So we, from a chemistry standpoint, I'll go into this a little bit. Tofu, it's basically a bind of calcium and protein and water. It's very similar to cheese making. But that bind, that chemical bind, is very loose. So over the course of time, water leaches out from tofu constantly. So now a lot of cooks globally, not just Western cooks, don't recognize this. So if you try to marinate tofu, you're never going to be able to get sauce inside, unlike meat, for example. So what you need to do is to recognize that and to really understand how to use the surface area of tofu to really flavor it. So, and if you have a commoditized product that's chalky, that doesn't taste good to start, and you coat it with sauce, once that sauce is gone, you're going to have something chalky and not very tasty. And that texture is usually won't win too many new converts. So most of our products, you know, we aim to really surprise people with taste first, both from a texture standpoint and from a flavor standpoint. And then after that, they, you know, it's I liken it to sushi. Now, sushi was introduced in the 80s. People didn't want to eat raw fish. And then somebody came up with the California roll.
Right.
And a lot of people started eating California rolls, you know, and the tempuras. And then over time, they gradually migrate to the sashimis and the pure aspect of sushi. Tofu is very similar. You know, we basically want to introduce really flavorful tofu. And after a while, we see our customers asking and seeking pure tofu. Like, we want just a firm tofu or the medium tofu or the fresh yuba instead of the flavor product, because now they want to experiment on their own. So we see that with tofu as we did with sushi. We see that with many other food in the U.S., like anything from chocolate to calamari to lobsters. It's a very similar trend.
Very, very interesting. So while tofu, as you're making it, is not, you're not positioning it as a meat substitute, or certainly not using it and forming it into traditional meat substitutes, do you ever talk about the environmental gains to be had when you're using soy as compared to meats?
Yeah, I think this is an area that a lot of people don't spend a lot of time understanding. You know, people tend to think, well, there's a lot of GMO soybeans out there. Most soybeans is used to make oil or in feed, or it's byproducts of something else, which is all true. But there is a small segment, 10% of soybeans, it's used for food. And of that 10%, a smaller percentage is organic. We as a small company, we have an opportunity to actually stand on a platform with our relationship with Chipotle, for example, to really re-educate people about the environmental and the ecological impact of soy. Soy as a plant, it's a self-fixing plant. So it's a nitrogen-fixing plant, as you probably know, working on the land.
Yes.
And so it's a great cover crop that really fix the nitrogen for the next rotation of crop. So legumes in general fall into that category. So it's really good for the grounds. It really helps take away so much of the need for chemical fertilizers, right, for example. And then soy beans in general, as a category, has a tremendous amount of protein. So tofu, it's a whole food that is made with the juice of soybeans into a curd that's very similar to cheese. And as such, it has a very low impact on the earth in terms of food miles. Of course, any food that has wide reach, which is necessary in the U.S. from the distribution standpoint, will have an impact. So that is something that we're trying to solve by actually having plants much closer to the urban areas that we're growing into. Mm-hmm. So currently, mm-hmm, the biggest market for us is in California. But as we have data and prove that there's a big reception in the East Coast, there's a high likelihood that we'll be able to plant out here instead of having to ship it from the West Coast.
Fascinating. So I've heard only the best things about Hodo Soy as a company as well. Do you want to talk about how you're moving from the finance sector to the food sector drove you to really make a conscious decision in forming a company culture?
Yeah. We talked about this earlier as far as my personal reason for starting a food company and developing a culture that support basically the lowest rung of employees. My family are immigrants. You know, I came here when I was 11 years old, about 30 plus years ago. And my parents basically were laborers. And, you know, in the U.S., the wealth gap between the top and the bottom, it's really spreading fast. And, you know, there's a lot of talk about minimum wage and living wages and such. So when I started the company, the commitment we made for our production workers, which is basically the first entry point is that we commit to paying them well, paying them a meaningful wage. And then as we grow, we commit to basically providing them insurance and basically try to give them as many opportunities to grow as immigrants, because that's usually the first group that come to work at any production facility. So we basically try to create a culture of diversity where it's not just one ethnic group or one gender or even age, actually. We really want old people as well as young people mm-hmm. working in our facility. But we also encourage them to learn English. We basically try to have a flexible schedule for them, whether for learning English or for taking care of elderly or their kids. But we also, over the course of time, implemented insurance program that we pay for completely, dental program. And most recently, we also put in place a 401k program with 4% matching for our employees. And this is really a neat surprise because when we implemented the health insurance program and we pay 100%, the adoption rate wasn't as high. But we didn't know why, but in subsequent conversations with them, we recognized that they took really good care of themselves. So they care about catastrophic health insurance, but they don't get sick that often because they really eat their own food and, you know, ethnic food, and they eat tofu. So they're generally pretty healthy. But they care about dental insurance because their history of living in their own country, they didn't have good health care. So the adoption rate for dental was higher. And then we didn't know whether people understand 401k program at this level when we implemented it. But it turned out that we educated them, and the adoption rate of our 401k program is really high. So wow. We're super psyched about it. And these are great experiments that meets sort of our culture for the company, and we're committed to helping them grow in the company as well as elsewhere.
Fascinating. When you look back at the last 10 years, what are some of the things you're most proud of in the growth of the company or anything within Hodosoi?
I think I'm really happy where our brand is. I think people are beginning to recognize who we are now that we're in both coasts and big cities. People recognize the quality of our food, which is really important because the quality of our food allows us to grow and sustain the quality of the workers. So I'm really proud of how we've managed to continue to innovate and to maintain and exceed the quality in terms of taste, the quality in terms of food safety. And also I'm really proud of the fact that we have very low turnovers at our company. In our industry, generally speaking, you have 100% turnover. We have about 5% or less. So I think the culture of the company really supports the loyalty of our employees. So I'm really proud of that. And I think that the third thing is I'm happy with the fact that we create opportunities not just for our workers and for people who transition from other careers into our business, into tofu making, but I'm also happy that it allows me as an individual to really do all the things I love to do and work with people and experiment and putting a good food out there.
Min, I'd like to wrap up just by asking you one final question. Can you give what advice would you give to somebody who's looking to start a food business today? A student coming out of Yale or just in general, somebody that's looking to tap into the quite incredible rise of interest in food and investment flowing into food.
That's a great question. I think there's a tremendous interest in food and a tremendous amount of money looking to invest in food. I think with any entrepreneurs in general, I think you have to have the resilience and the patience to start any business. In food in particular, I think the passion, you need to have the passion for it. You have to have the patience because food companies are not like tech companies. You're not going to see returns very quickly unless your scale is really small. Like if you open a small farmer's market chain or a small chain, you see returns. But then to scale that is really difficult and takes many, many years to do. I also suggest that you bring in a lot of friends to help you grow the business. because it's always better to bounce ideas off of one another and have partners to help you grow instead of doing it alone. So those are, and finding the right mentors, and it's really important. I'm lucky. I have great mentors in California. And unlike tech, you know, there's very low barrier to entry, and people are very generous in terms of advice and such. So that's really nice as far as the contrast between food and tech.
And I actually lied. I'm going to ask one more question, just because this is the Bright Lights Green Sites series with a focus on urban entrepreneurship. Can you talk a little bit about your relationship with the city of Oakland and why you decided to open your first factory there?
Yeah, we have a fantastic relationship with Oakland. We chose Oakland even though we looked throughout the Bay Area for a location. We chose Oakland because there was a labor force that was ready to work with us. The city has a deep history in food, it's rejuvenating again as a food city. And so the infrastructure was there, and the city was really supportive to help us build the infrastructure from the financing standpoint. So those are the reasons, and also from the transportation standpoint, you know, where our plant is, it's close to 3 freeways, so access to other areas of the Bay Area is really easy. So from transportation to labor force to basically economic development of the city, those are the key reasons why we chose Oakland, and we've had a fantastic relationship because of that.
Thank you very much. So this concludes the second session of the Bright Lights Green Sites series. I would like to extend another thank you to Min Tsai for joining us today, as well as Justin Freiberg. The Bright Lights Green Sites series is sponsored by the Center for Business Environment at Yale and is this year's Save an Entrepreneurship series. Thank you for listening.